You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. The Senate voted to acquit former President Donald Trump on the charge he incited an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building, capping a week-long impeachment trial that was fueled by efforts to hold on to the White House after losing the presidential election. One by one over the weekend, senators acting as the jury stood at their desks and stated their vote, with 57 for guilty, 43 for not guilty. 67 votes, though, were needed to convict the former president, so he was found not guilty. Joining us today to talk more about this is McKay Cunningham. He is a law professor at the University of Idaho, who also specializes in constitutional law. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Gemma. Good to be here.
So can we start with how an impeachment works? Because even though the former president was not convicted, he was actually impeached.
Yeah, that's right. In the Constitution, it's a two-step process. First, the House of Representatives decides whether to bring articles of impeachment. And then if a simple majority votes for those articles of impeachment, it then goes over to the Senate. And the Senate must try the official on those specific articles of impeachment. And only if two-thirds of the senators votes, then there will be conviction based on the articles of impeachment. And that's why, you know, we have Andrew Johnson and Clinton, of course, and Trump, all three of whom have been impeached, but none of them were convicted by two-thirds vote of the Senate.
Okay, so the argument that a lot of GOP senators used to say that Trump was not guilty was that you can't impeach a president who is already out of office. Now, many legal scholars, both conservative and liberal, disagreed with that statement. Can you talk about that, Professor?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I'm glad that you asked it. And I believe that our senators here in Idaho, both Senators Risch and Crapo, voted to acquit Trump, but on the grounds that you just mentioned, on this idea that the Senate does not have the power to convict on impeachment after the president has left office. And there's a lot of really good constitutional arguments to get into, and I will in just a second. But one thing that I wanted to bring up, and that is that the Senate itself had that debate. Their lawyers argued it for 4 hours on each side, and then the Senate voted. And from that point on, it was all of the senators' obligation, it was their duty to review the substantive claim, to review the evidence that former President Trump incited an insurrection. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the Senate addressed this issue, they had argument on it, and then they voted, and they voted that they did, in fact, have the power to have this trial even after Trump has left office, and they should have been bound thereby. And so when Senator Risch and Crapo and Mitch McConnell, for example, say that, yes, Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day, but then vote to acquit based on the lack of the power of the Senate to try, that's a little difficult to get around, particularly when all of the senators have to swear a new oath. And this is a special and distinct oath from the one that they swear to when they become members of Congress. There's a specific oath that's required under the Constitution for senators when an impeachment trial begins. And here it is. I solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald J. Trump now pending, I will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and the laws. So I don't know if you want to get into the constitutional arguments for the reason why the Senate does have the authority to try an officer after they left office.
I do, McKay, because I think that that's because you brought up one of the other points that I wanted to talk about was this argument that was made to even decide if it was actually constitutional. And as you said, there was a vote in the Senate. Now that didn't have to be a two-thirds majority. So
No. They
voted. So in a way, shouldn't that argument have been completely off the table?
That's precisely it. For example, if the Senate voted 51 to 49 to table a bill, that bill is tabled. Like, if you lost that vote, you don't get to just ignore it. And so senators who acquitted Trump And especially those who said that Trump was probably at fault for some of his conduct, but they voted to acquit because they lacked the jurisdiction to hear the case, I think is problematic.
And tell me why you believe that's problematic from a constitutional standpoint.
Yeah, well, you know, the House managers did a pretty good job of laying out the arguments. And they started with the purpose. Well, what is the purpose of having these impeachment statements within the Constitution? Is it just to remove from office? Or are there other things going on, like accountability, deterrence, and of course, disqualification from office? And so once you start with the purpose of these impeachment clauses in the Constitution, then you look at the text itself. And Article 1, Section 2 gives the sole power to draft articles of impeachment to the House. Article 1, Section 3, Article 1, Section 3, Clause 7. When you look at the actual language within the Constitution, there is language that says, yeah, the officer can be removed, but also disqualified. Mm-hmm. And so the language of the Constitution, in conjunction with its purpose, suggests that the Senate did, in fact, have the power to try President Trump even after he left office. And then, you know, the other things to take a really interesting page out of the conservative playbook, because they love to identify what the founders thought. What was the original intent of the founders with regard to impeachment? And when you dig into the Federalist Papers or to what the founders were saying with regard to the Constitutional Convention, there is a lot to suggest that the founders anticipated that the Senate would have the power to try an impeachment even after the person had left office.
Is there, I believe there is wording within the Constitution where these GOP senators were really sticking on, and it was verbiage basically instead of or. And I know that seems very simplistic, but isn't that what what their argument was hanging on? Was this idea that, well, we can't convict if they're out of office because the Constitution says and, not or.
Yeah, that's definitely an argument that was forwarded. But when you look at Article 1, Section 3, it says the Senate has the power to try impeachments, all impeachments. And there's no exception in Article 1, Section 3. And on top of that, if you said and, somehow means that the only remedy available is removal and disqualification, that essentially erases disqualification out of the Constitution, because folks could just resign mid-trial, right? In the middle of the Senate trial, it looks like you're about to lose, so I'm going to go ahead and resign. And therefore, you can never be disqualified, which would suggest that that word within the Constitution has no meaning. And when we interpret the Constitution, we always have to interpret the words to have some meaning.
And with that said, what's interesting too with that is this idea of censure versus impeachment. And I'm curious, because now that we have an acquittal, and I know that there was talk of censure, which I believe they could have then, if the former president was censured, you could then say he cannot, you could vote to have him no longer be able to hold office. Is that even on the table anymore? I mean, basically, the ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, there is quite a bit of fatigue. I don't know if you watched the entirety of the trial, but it took a lot out of a lot of us. And I don't know whether or not Congress has the appetite to formally censure the president, particularly when it would not have the force and effect of law. So what if former President Trump is censured by Congress? That would not, in and of itself, keep him from running for office the next go round.
And ultimately, the other point that I want to talk about too is, in your opinion, do you believe that our forefathers did not think of a January exception? Because this was also brought up during the impeachment trial, right? That if you cannot convict after someone leaves office, then basically, you know, come January 1st, anything's on the table.
Yeah, and that's one of the most dangerous times for our government, for our people, for our way of doing things, because that's precisely when that very delicate transfer of power takes place. And for there to be a void of any accountability during that time is particularly worrisome. So when you look at what the founders were thinking, one of the interesting stories is that, you know, we accepted or adopted rather the whole impeachment process from the English. They had impeachment and we saw how it worked, and our founders decided that we wanted the same thing. And in fact, in Philadelphia, those 55 men who gathered there to draft the Constitution, at that very same time, there was a man named Warren Hastings who was being impeached in England. He had left office 2 years prior, and yet that impeachment trial was still going forward. And there's nothing to suggest in any of the discussions with regard to the Constitutional Convention or in the Federalist Papers that our founders thought that the Senate should not have this power when someone has already left office, essentially opening up a January exception. So, you know, it's not just me saying that. There are more than 170 leading constitutional law scholars, a lot of whom are very, very conservative in their ideology, but all of them signing on to this suggestion that a January exception was not contemplated by the founders, and the Senate certainly did have the power to address the impeachment even after Trump left office.
But ultimately, this is a public trial. This is not a criminal trial. And, you know, there have been four impeachment trials in the history of the United States, President Trump being impeached twice, Clinton, as you said, and then Andrew Johnson. With that said, though, this was the most bipartisan vote we've ever seen when it comes to an impeachment. But again, it's political.
No, great point. A lot of it was definitely political. One thing that I wanted to bring out, Gemma, is the long-term damage that undermining the confidence in the vote will have on us going forward. You know, as early as 2016, the president said, if I lose this election against Hillary Clinton, it will only be because the election was rigged. And then after he won the election, not the popular vote, but the Electoral College, he insisted that he really did win by a landslide, also the popular vote, but for all of the illegal and fraudulent voting that took place. And then, of course, 6 months prior to a 2020 election, he starts laying the groundwork again. You watch, this will be the most fraudulent, rigged election in history. If I lose, it will only be because Democrats stole the election. This is very damaging to our faith in the institutions that we absolutely have to have. 73% of Republicans believe that there was widespread voter fraud, that Biden would not have been elected but for voter fraud. So that's damaging in and of itself, but conservative states like Idaho are now starting to draft laws to restrict voting based on this false narrative, to make it more difficult to limit access to the ballot. I don't know if you saw House Bill 88, it's been put aside for a while, but it would make it a felony for me to hand off not only my vote, but my parents' votes, to walk them down the street and put them into a mailbox. That would be a felony, even though, to be clear, there was no evidence of any fraud here in Idaho.
Right. You bring up such good points, and I so appreciate your time. Wish we could talk about this more, but things that we all need to be thinking of. We've been talking with McKay Cunningham, a law professor at the University of Idaho, who specializes in constitutional law. Always good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Jimma.
Absolutely. More Idaho Matters next.